Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today our special guest is Peter Schiff. Peter is the president and chief global strategist of Euro-Pacific Capital. He's the author of several books. One of them was the best-selling book, Crash Proof, How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse, and a book that I read and enjoyed. Peter, welcome back to our show.
Thanks for having me on. And, you know, I've updated the book. It is now called Crash Proof 2.0.
I saw
how
that.
How to Profit from the Economic Collapse.
The, as in?
It's already started.
It's major, and it's here. You know, in 2007, the crash was not obvious to many, but inevitable to you. So what were you seeing that others were not?
Well, I think I understood the economy better than most people, at least people who were working on Wall Street or in government. There were certainly other people like myself who saw it for what it was. What was unique about me is that I was, you know, writing books about it. I was going on television about it. I was working in the brokerage industry. There weren't too many people, you know, with that, you know, those that background, you know, sounding the alarm. But I got plenty of emails over the years of people who saw me on television or who, you know, read my book and said, you know, you're saying exactly what I've been saying or what I've been thinking.
So
There were other people. I didn't have a monopoly on foresight. But I think the problem is most people out there, you know, are just, you know, they learned Keynesian economics growing up, and so as a result, they're all screwed up. They really have no understanding about how economies work. And, of course, a lot of people who get trapped inside a bubble, you know, it's hard to see a bubble when you're inside it. And I think I had a very objective view of what was going on, and my judgment wasn't as clouded. And I saw, you know, people buying houses that they couldn't afford at prices that were ridiculously high relative to, you know, what I was paying to rent property. And I knew that the lenders were throwing their lending standards out the books. They were letting people buy homes with no collateral, nothing down. They were letting them lie about their income. They weren't documenting their assets. And I knew the government was guaranteeing all this debt through Freddie and Fannie. I understood the moral hazards. I knew the Federal Reserve had interest rates much too low. I saw our huge trade balances and our, you know, and I knew the economy was a mess and that we were just inflating a giant bubble. And, you know, it's only a question of time until bubbles burst. I mean, they don't inflate forever. So you didn't really have to be a rocket scientist to see this coming. You just had to be, you know, a complete idiot or just immersed in a bubble to not see it coming.
Well, it seemed like most of the people that you debated, and I watched quite a number of them on TV over 2007, they were pretty vociferous in saying that you were absolutely wrong.
And I know, and you know what? They still think I'm wrong. You know, when I get on television with these guys, you know, they're still singing the same old tune. They still don't understand the real economic problems underlying our economy. That's why most of them still think that the economy is getting better right now. They think the stimulus is working. They think Ben Bernanke did the right thing. You know, he did the exact wrong thing. The stimulus is not working. We're stimulating the problem. We're making our problems bigger. We are trying to reflate a bubble, and ultimately, we're going to have even bigger problems to deal with when they fail, because you can't reflate it.
All right. If you were asked to give a State of the Union speech, what would be the title of your talk?
Well, no, the union is certainly not sound from my perspective, and I think we need a lot to, you know, to change. I mean, you know, I am running for Senate right now in Connecticut. I'm trying to get the Republican nomination to go after the seat currently occupied by Chris Dodd, who was, you know, one of the most culpable senators in office as far as, you know, enabling the housing bubble by being a staunch protector of Freddie and Fannie while they were doing all the things they shouldn't have been doing. But we need to seriously restructure our government. I mean, the government today is spending twice as much as it spent 10 years ago. And 10 years ago, the government was too big, and now it's twice the size. It is suffocating the life out of the economy. It's like a cancer that's living off the blood of the private sector, and the bigger the government gets, the more blood it has to suck out of the economy to survive. We can't survive this. We need to dramatically shrink the current size of government. The government is doing the exact opposite of what it needs to do. Instead of shrinking, which would be a real stimulus to the economy, it's expanding, which is hindering and burdening the economy. So we need the serious reductions in government. I think we need to change our tax policy. We have to move away from punishing hard work and punishing savings and investment, and we need to try to raise revenue based on people spending money and consuming, not when they work and produce. And, you know, there's a lot of things that we need to do differently. We need to unshackle the free market. We need to remove a lot of the regulations that have been put in effect over the years that distort the free market and that drive up prices in certain sectors, like for education or for healthcare. We need to get the government out of the way so that the market can solve these problems and deliver products to Americans, cheaply and of good quality. And we have to produce real jobs. We just can't, have a phony service sector. We can't pretend that nobody has to make anything, that we can just buy all the stuff that the Chinese make or the Japanese make and pay for it by borrowing money. I mean, that is just a disaster waiting to happen. It's not a viable economy.
If you wanted to create a formula for inflation, what are the necessary ingredients for inflation?
Well, we've got them. I mean, you need a central bank that's creating a lot of money. And, of course, usually what the catalyst for a central bank creating a lot of money is governments spending a lot of money. When governments spend more money than they collect in taxes, they often get the difference from the Federal Reserve or from their central bank, which is what's happening right now. So not only do we have all the ingredients of inflation, but we have all the ingredients for hyperinflation. And if we don't change a direction, that is what we're going to have.
First of all, for the last 10 years, we've had some of these pieces in place, and yet the inflation hasn't been a big factor yet. So,
we just can't see it. But remember that we should be experiencing deflation right now, but we're not. You know, when you inflate a bubble, the flip side is that it deflates.
Right.
And prices should be falling right now, which would be helpful to the economy. Instead, the government is preventing them from falling by creating inflation. But ultimately, prices are not going to just not fall. They're going to really start to rise. And, of course, one of the ingredients that most Keynesians don't understand for really high inflation is high unemployment. Most people think, they believe in this Phillips curve nonsense, that there's a trade-off, that as long as you have a lot of unemployment, you can't have inflation, or that if you have low unemployment, that causes inflation. That's actually the opposite of what's true. In general, countries that have very low levels of unemployment tend to have low levels of inflation as well. It's when you have a lot of unemployment that you tend to have more inflation, because what happens is you have fewer people working and producing goods and governments printing more and more money to try to artificially stimulate a weak economy. And so you have more money chasing fewer goods and prices go ballistic.
In the 60s, we went through, in the 60s and the 70s, we had the same thought process, the Phillips curve. And it got us into tough trouble. So do you see the path to inflation or hyperinflation taking a decade or more, or do you think it's more severe than that?
No, I mean, it's really up to, the Chinese or, the Japanese at this point, the Saudis. I mean, when are they going to stop loaning us money that we'll never be able to pay back? And it's hard to, figure that out. I mean, it could happen tomorrow. It could happen in a couple of years. I doubt it's going to take 10 years. I would be in shock if it took that long. So I think it's going to happen sometime over the next several years. And it's going to be a very painful, reality check for Americans. Hopefully I'm a senator when it happens, so I can prevent the government from, reacting the way they are currently reacting to these problems, because that will bring on the hyperinflation. It is the way we react when, the world stops buying our debt and we are faced with this critical choice on what to do, to have the Federal Reserve print the money necessary to buy the debt and keep the government spending, or do we make the radical cuts in government spending that we need to make to avoid massive inflation? I want to be there to make sure that we choose the right path. Because right now, based on the people that are in the Congress, they're almost certainly going to choose the wrong path, because that is the more political expedient way to go.
And that would be to monetize the debt?
Yep.
Okay.
Crank up the printing presses, and then that's the end of it. That's the slippery slope. That's where Weimar Republic Germany or Argentina or modern-day Zimbabwe, many, many countries throughout history have made that fatal mistake, and it has led to disaster. But unfortunately, our politicians never learn anything from history. Even recent history, they can make mistakes like blowing up the stock market bubble and then make an identical mistake to blow up the real estate bubble. They learn nothing from history.
Would you say that Paul Volcker was the perfect guy at the right time in the 80s? And do you think there's another one that might show up in time for this
Not
problem?
Now. I do believe that the 80s we got lucky because we had a combination of Paul Volcker and Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan understood that government was the problem, that government was too big, that it had to shrink, and he understood the importance of sound money, of the value of the dollar, and an independent Federal Reserve that, you know, had the leeway to do what was right. And initially, when Volcker was raising interest rates, politicians on both sides of the aisle were calling for his resignation. He was very, very unpopular. He was a villain that everybody hated, and Ronald Reagan stood behind him. And so we had the right combination of leadership at that time. Right now, we're nowhere near there. The person who currently occupies the White House is the polar opposite of Ronald Reagan. He believes that government is the answer, that the free market is the problem, and that we solve our problems by making government bigger. That is a very dangerous ideology to believe in. And we have Mr. Ben Bernanke, who is the polar opposite of Paul Volcker, Helicopter Ben, who's going to, you know, drop money from helicopters to get people spending. So we are in serious trouble right now based on our current leadership. They are leading us to disaster.
I'm in the California real estate market. We're investors, and we buy and sell. And the prices are definitely firming. I'm very suspicious of it, but that is a fact.
They're firming because of all the government props.
Correct.
Those props will not be there forever. Meanwhile, what the government is doing now to keep real estate at unsustainably high levels is actually exacerbating the problem, because what's happening is they're still building new homes because the government is making it easy for people to buy them with 3% down payments and subsidized loans at artificially low interest rates. So home builders are still making homes. If the market were in charge, prices would be so low right now that nobody would be producing any homes. But what we're doing now is simply adding more to the supply. Ultimately, when the government supports give way, the collapse is going to be that much bigger. We're still suckering more people into the real estate market. More people are buying homes they really can't afford with money they don't have. People are still able to extract equity from their homes that at some point will not exist. You know, that real estate in California is still much too expensive. Real estate needs to fall. And this is how you can think about, you know, where the bottom is. But real estate prices need to reflect a true market. And a true market would be where the average person in California can afford to put down a 20% down payment with his own money and then qualify for a mortgage without any federal guarantees, without the involvement of Freddie or Fannie. Just convince a bank, based on their own creditworthiness, their own ability to pay, to lend them the money to buy that house. And in addition to that, they should have enough savings in the bank on top of their 20% down payment to pay for maintenance, to pay, you know, for other costs that come up when you own a house, you know, when the roof springs a leak, you know, or, you know, something happens and you need $5,000 or $10,000 in maintenance costs. You got to have a reserve. And you got to have savings in case you lose your job. What if you lose your job? I mean, you shouldn't buy a house if you need your job to make your mortgage payment. You should probably have at least 6 months to a year of mortgage payments in the bank so that if you lose your job, you can keep making the payments. So prices have to fall to levels low enough where that's what's going on. And so you can imagine how much lower prices are going to have to fall in California before people can actually afford to buy houses.
So you
right now it's all a gimmick, but keeping real estate prices artificially high is hurting the economy. It's hurting because it's because in order to do that, interest rates have to stay artificially low. Capital has to be sucked out of the real economy and used to prop up the housing market, which means businesses don't have capital. They can't grow. They can't expand. So the more we keep home prices inflated, the more Americans are going to lose their jobs. So eventually, you're going to have these high real estate prices, but 20 or 30% of the population is going to be unemployed. And that actually makes it worse because now fewer people could actually afford a house. We're not going to have job growth. We're not going to have a real economy until the government gets out of the real estate support business.
Well, they've been in it for a long time. So what you're saying is you expect the percentage of ownership of real estate should be considerably less than it is.
Well, I think right now a lot of people own houses that really should not be owning houses.
No.
A lot of people, I think, in California, for example, a lot of renters were sucked into the real estate market based on the anticipation of quick profits. A lot of people, their principal motivation for buying a house was to make money. They didn't want to throw money away on rent. They wanted to build equity and get rich. Well, once people realize that owning a home is not, you know, a winning lottery ticket, that it's buying a house is like buying a car or buying a boat. It's not a way to make money. It's spending money. And once people realize that, then there are still going to be some people that buy houses. A lot of people want to own houses for reasons having nothing to do with financial gain. But there is a significant percentage of people there, maybe it's 10 or 15% of the market, that if they didn't think the house would go up, they just assume rent. And so those people need to go back to renting. There's a lot of single guys, you know, guys in their 20s, girls in their 20s, unmarried. Why do they own houses? It makes no sense. You know, they want to be, it's much more flexible to be a renter. It's much less expensive. It's like, there's not the hassle. You know, that's what a lot of people should do. And I also think a lot of people in the real estate bubble bought more house than they really needed. You know, they bought a bigger house because they thought, well, if real estate's going to double, why not own a $500,000 house? Because I make more money than owning a $200,000 house. But once people think that real estate prices aren't going to go up, they're just going to go flat or down, then they're not going to buy more house than they need. They'll buy what they need. And so we've overbuilt. I think we've built too many McMansions based on people who really don't need them or want them, you know, when they actually have to feel the cost. You know, when real estate was going up and people thought real estate would go up 10 or 20% a year, the expected appreciation usually offset the entire cost of the mortgage or the property taxes. So there was no cost to home ownership. You were being paid to own a house.
Mm-hmm.
But the minute real estate is no longer going up, the actual cost of home ownership becomes more apparent. And now people say, you know what? I don't want to pay all that money. I don't want to pay, you know, this huge mortgage. I don't want to pay the taxes. I don't want to pay the condo dues. I don't want to pay the maintenance. I don't want to pay for the lawn care. I don't want to do all that. I don't want the insurance. I'll just rent. That's what's going to happen. So, you know, you still got a long ways to go down in property. And the other problem for California is the state's bankrupt. Companies are fleeing. The unemployment rate in California is going to keep rising. 2 or 3 years from now, it's going to be higher than it is today. So, you know, when you're unemployed, you can't make your mortgage payments. You don't have any money to buy houses. So it's going to be a bloodbath in California real estate. The only thing that will save California real estate is hyperinflation. But I wouldn't be, you know, looking at that as some kind of panacea because, yes, you know, real estate prices might not collapse. Or they might actually go up, but they'll go up much more slowly than the cost of food or energy or anything else. So people might be living in a very expensive house, but they're not going to be using the air conditioning because they can't afford it. They're not going to be running the heat. There's not going to be a lot of food in their refrigerator because they're not going to afford any of that stuff. And, you know, if there's any maintenance problems and they have to fix something, they're not going to be able to do it because it'll be too expensive to make the repairs because that's how expensive, you know, the materials are going to be. So, you know, the houses are going to be dilapidating. You know, people are going to be huddled up in blankets, but, you know, the house value will still be there in nominal terms.
I have a request. When you get to the Senate, since there is going to be a lot of people going from owner-occupant to renter, could you please get the policies to change to get financing for investors that were perfectly willing to put 20 or 30% down, but there's literally no financing for investors?
But that's because the government is directing all the financing to home buyers and college students and itself. See, what I want to do is get the government out of subsidizing anybody's mortgage so that loans or anybody's loan so that loans go to the most creditworthy borrowers. And under normal circumstances, without all these government guarantees, businessmen, investors, you know, they would actually get credit first. They're better risks. But once the government comes in and tilts the playing field in favor of, you know, an individual, you know, because there's a guarantee, then, you know, you got no chance. Businesses have no chance. They're going to get, you know, crowded out of the credit market. And that's not what we want. I mean, I would much rather have an investor buy a property who actually has the money to maintain it than try to keep an individual in a property that he can't afford and where he has no equity. Well, because if they have no equity, they're not going to maintain the properties. An investor who has real money down, he's going to keep the property up to maintain his investment. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, renting makes sense. You know, I was a renter almost my whole life. I finally bought my first house this year. I'm 46 years old. All right.
Now, why did you decide to do that?
And I've always thought that renting made more sense, and I was able to make a lot of money, yet I rented. I had plenty of money. I mean, I was in situations in Florida where I had a housekeeper, and my housekeeper owned her house, but she cleaned mine, which I rented.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, I rented a nicer place than the one that she owned. You know, you can still live in a nice place and rent it.
Sure. Now, but you bought now.
Yeah, but what? It's not because I think that it's a good investment.
Okay.
It made sense. I was tired of moving around. The price I paid for the house that I live in is 40% less than the original owner who bought it brand new paid in 2002.
Okay.
And it's 60% less than what it was listed for on the market 2 years ago. So I obviously didn't pay top dollar.
No.
And I also bought the property for less than it would cost to construct it from scratch. So I know I didn't overpay, right? If I had to build this house, it would cost me more to build it than I bought it for. So I didn't overpay, right? But I don't think that I caught the bottom. But the problem is, I liked the house. I rented it a year ago. And, you know, of course, during the year that I was renting it, the last year, it depreciated substantially. You know, the guy never would have sold me the house a year ago for what I paid for it last month or whatever. Mm-hmm. I bought it. So I certainly benefited by renting while my owner was, you know, losing money on the property. Well, but, you know, at some point you don't want to move around anymore. I'm getting married again. I like the house, you know. And so I just didn't feel like moving, and I was willing to absorb the added cost because there are other houses that I could rent, and the rents are less expensive than the cost of ownership. But for me, it was a lifestyle choice about settling down in this house. But, you know, people ask me, well, should I buy real estate now for a financial reason? I say, absolutely not. You know, if you're thinking about it as an investment, or if, then don't, then keep renting. It's all about a lifestyle. Just like if someone says, you know, should I buy a boat? I own a boat. I mean, obviously that's a stupid financial move to own a boat. I don't own it for the financial part of it. I own it for other intangible elements that have nothing to do with money.
Okay. Do you think interest rates then, or you must think interest rates are going to go much higher?
Yeah, eventually they will. Right now the government is keeping them artificially low, and there's a limit to how long they can do that. At some point, they're going to go up dramatically. In fact, the lower we keep them and the longer we keep them low, the higher they're going to go when they move up. And, you know, that's what's ultimately going to be the problem. And imagine, you know, there are a lot of people that say, let's, you know, buy a house now while interest rates are low. That's not the way to do it. I'd rather buy a house for financial reasons when interest rates are high, because that means the prices will be low. So, you know, you can say, yeah, you know, buy the house for $1 million while you can get a 5% interest. Well, why don't you wait till interest rates are 15% and then buy the house for $200,000? You know, because imagine where real estate prices are going to go if interest rates go way up. They're going to crash.
Well, they didn't last time, interestingly enough. Interest rates went up and real estate went up with it.
No, because remember, the government found a way around that, and it was the teaser rate, the adjustable rate mortgage, interest-only mortgage. The way we were able to sidetrack that is even though 30-year fixed rate mortgages went up, because the Fed kept short-term rates so low, right, people were still able to overpay for houses using these gimmick loans. That's what did it.
No, I'm talking about.
And of course, there are a lot of and once they took away the down payment, you know, see, normally if real estate prices are rising too fast, people are priced out of the market because they don't have the down payment, right? You can't get 20% down of a more expensive house. But when the lenders threw away the requirement for a down payment, that enabled prices to go up even as interest rates were going up. And of course, part of it was the speculative mentality of, well, who cares if interest rates are going up? I want to own a house because I'm going to get rich. So for a while, in a bubble, in a mania, you can have that situation, but it can't last. And of course, at this point in time, you know, you're not going to get those kind of loans anymore. They don't have, you know, you can't get an adjustable rate mortgage anymore and only qualify at the teaser level. Meanwhile, the teaser rates are not as low as they used to be. I mean, people used to get loans where for the first few years, their payments were 2 or 3%. You can't get those. They were LIBOR loans. People were getting five-year loans tied to LIBOR where they were paying like 1.5.
That's right. Sometimes
you do them interest only and nothing down. So people were really, really leveraged. You can't get that leveraged anymore.
Peter, so we're down to our last 20 seconds. I want to make sure I mentioned your website. It's www.europac.net. Is that correct?
Yeah, if people want to visit my website, learn about my brokerage business, Euro Pacific Capital, how I can help you invest your money around the world to try to protect your wealth from inflation and a weak U.S. economy, they can visit my website at europac.net, pick up a copy of Crash Proof 2.0. If they want to help me get to the United States Senate, they can visit my website, which is shiftforsenate.com. There's information about my campaign. You can volunteer. You can donate money. Anything is going to help. I think it's really important that I get to Congress and try to head off this train wreck.
I hope you get there. And, boy, I don't know if you're going to enjoy the day-to-day grind that must be. But, Peter, thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Thank you for having me on.
I appreciate it a lot.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.